without reference. The course of revolution is 360 degrees. Understand the cycle that never ends. Understand the beginning to be the end, and nothing is in between but space and time that I make or you make to relate or not to relate to the world outside my mind, your mind. Speak not of revolution until you are willing to eat rats.
listening to Reparations in Action here on uhururadio.com. Uhuru Radio is the international voice, online voice, of the International African Revolution. Reparations in Action is the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee and its mass organization, the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, both of which are organizations of white people who work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party to win support from other white people for black self-determination, liberation, and reparations to the African community. My name is Jamie Simpson, your host and a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, and I'd like to begin, as always, by extending our profound appreciation to the African People's Socialist Party and the entire Uhuru News Network for giving us this hour every Sunday at 1 p.m. on uhururadio.com to bring the message of black power into the hearts and minds of the white community. And today's episode is being broadcast live on March 6th, 2016, just a couple days before a celebration known as International Women's Day. And we are honored to have as our featured guest this afternoon, Comrade Yejide Urunmila. She is the National Director of the African People's Socialist Party's Women's Commission. She is also the President of the African National Women's Organization. And we thought it was only fitting during this month of Women's Month, we should have on someone who represents the interests in particular of oppressed women of the African working class. And that is Yejide Urunmila, who has already been on Uhuru Radio today discussing recent police murders. And we really appreciate you for joining us today on Reparations in Action. Uhuru and welcome, Yejide Urunmila.
Uhuru, comrade.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's always an honor to have you on this program of solidarity with African liberation. And it's, as I was saying, very fitting today to have your voice on Uhuru Radio as you lead such a powerful organization as the African National Women's Organization. That has a pretty storied history, a very vibrant history. Could you explain to our listeners what this organization, the ANWO is the abbreviation or acronym, the African National Women Organization, what it is and what it was formed to accomplish and address?
Uhuru. So the African National Women's Organization is a mass organization that was created by, that was called for in the Fifth Party Congress Constitution, I'm sorry, in the Constitution of the Party to be organized to empower and bring African women into political life. And so we are here to address the contradiction, the colonial contradictions that impact African women specifically. So while we understand that we face oppression from the white nationalists by imperialism and capitalism, we also understand that there are oppression that we experience as with internally within the oppressed African masses. And so our job is to really look at all of those things, that the contradictions that are as a result of colonial domination, and use our capacity to organize and push back against them and hold it up as a result of colonialism, as opposed to other organizations who identify as female or women. Ours is not gender-based. What we talk about is the impacts of colonialism on our lives. So the impacts, how we treat each other as Africans and how the oppressor treats us as African women and as African people. And so the short answer is that we were organized to bring the masses of African working class women into organizations so that we can build the capacity to push back against state imperialism and colonialism.
And what a time in which to be doing this kind of work when we see attacks on African women increasing daily, and the severity of attacks. You had mentioned in your description of ANWO that you approach this question of the special oppression of African women from that perspective, from an anti-colonial perspective as the entire community, not from a gender perspective. And on that, I'd like to just mention that you had written a really powerful article that I believe was the call for the forming of the founding conference of the African National Women's Organization. And if I'm not mistaken, there was at least a section of that article entitled, "There is no such thing as women in general." And could you tell our listeners what you meant by that statement and speak to that a bit?
Absolutely. So even though we were called on to be organized by the party, we didn't actually get founded until last year, March 2015, when we had two conferences in Washington, D.C., and another in London, England. And to help people understand why we were forming a women's section of the movement or as a part of the African liberation movement, the movement to be free for African people, that I had to write I wrote a resolution, a basis for why we were organizing ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the section that you're talking about, there's no such thing as as women in general, speaks to this whole idea, really helps to bring people to an understanding that all women do not have the same experiences. Mm-hmm. And that women of the oppressed African nation definitely do not have the same historical fight and struggle as women of the oppressed nation. So when we see people organize homogeneously as like women, we're fighting for women's rights, we really have to understand which women's rights they're fighting for. Is it in the interest of the many people who have been oppressed by the same women that they're fighting right next to? Mm-hmm. So idea around not the women, the idea of women in general means that, white women have experienced a life that was based on the oppression and exploitation of African and other people. Their rights that they were struggling for was fought and won or not won based on was still allowing for the oppression of African people. And so when we talk about white women's rights, where while there were white women who were saying they wanted the right to vote and they wanted to be able to work in the workforce and things like that, African women have been working for hundreds of years for white people. African women have been the beast of burden for many white women. So, and there have always been, we fed their children, we've clothed them, we've cooked for them, we've worked in their fields, we, ensured that they had the most hospitable life possible at the expense of our own hospitable life, where we were working in the fields, when you watch our children getting taken away, and in many cases by white women who would just steal our babies and sell them off to get some resources to, to help to facilitate their lifestyle. So obviously there is a clear delineation between women of the oppressor nation and women of the oppressed, and how our experiences and the things that we're fighting for are different. So when African women are fighting for liberation, our liberation is tied and connected to the liberation of the entire African population. And our liberation comes as a consequence of the privileges and rights of white people in general. And so, yeah, absolutely. There's no such thing as women. We each have our different experiences. Oppressed people have a very different historical basis for the struggles to be free than white women do.
Uhuru, it's such a distinct message than what you would even hear from the so-called, forgive me, this is the wrong term, but African feminists or black feminists. This is a much more anti-colonial message. And on that topic of the difference of experience between African women and white women, I think in modern times, it'd be hard to conjure up a better example than the experience of Hillary Rodham Clinton and her access to power. And anyway, I would like to ask you to just speak to the Hillary Clinton 2016 campaign and its obvious appeal to, quote-unquote, breaking the glass ceiling. What is the impact of that kind of feminist struggle coming from the ruling class that seeks to scoop up all female voters as one block versus the message that, you know, that you're giving? Does the message from Hillary Clinton resonate with the African working class at all?
Absolutely not. I think Hillary Clinton resonates as a white male, just as white and as oppressive as McCain and some other, and George W. Bush. She represents that same ongoing system of oppression that we all know too well. And even her attempts to kind of get like the women's vote, I think it's not successful. Because even women are, you know, women who absolutely have some sort of like political basis won't vote for this person. But those who aren't honest, though, will just align with her and this idea of breaking the glass ceiling. And the glass ceiling was just was put there by the white men of the oppressed nation so that white women can be controlled and stay underneath their rule. Mm-hmm. And so the only glass ceiling that there she's wanting to break is the one that sits her right next to white men, so that she can go ahead and continue the very same things that they've done, which is oppress and, you know, and causing, you know, the curators of imperialism, the purveyors of colonial domination, and that's not saying that white women don't participate in it, even if they're not sitting next to white men. But that's just showing that they want to enjoy more of the spoils that come from that exploitation of African people and the violence that comes from that as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, her attempts to like really aligning herself with that female language and all of that stuff, I think it falls short even to women of the oppressed nation, but also definitely when it comes to African working class, I don't think that we can buy Hillary. She's not her husband, which Africans mistakenly identify as the first black president, even though he did some of the worst policies imaginable for African people during his reign. Mm-hmm. And she was right there next to him, but her policies are a lot more conservative and more in line with people, you know, what people would think of with a George W. Bush or McCain or some other sort of figure in one of these bourgeois political parties.
Right. And it's so often people who don't have a political basis, as you're saying, are willing to go toward that lesser of the evils. But as I've heard Chairman Amalia Chatella say, it's really the evil of the lessers.
Yeah.
What options that they offer. And this wasn't in the official questions, but now that you're mentioning this question of white women and women, you know, not only taking part in some of the loot in terms of breaking the glass ceiling, but in being engaged in the violence, mm-hmm. I'm recalling that it's pretty recently that they've been discussing officially allowing women to fight on the front lines of battles in infantry. And mm-hmm. During the same time that we have a white woman as candidate for president, it doesn't mm-hmm. seem like it's coincidence to me. I'm not sure if you have any thoughts on that. In terms of women joining the military, I think that's kind of a softball question, but would you like to speak to it?
Yeah, I think the military overall, whether you're at a desk or whether you're fighting on the front lines, male or female, you are a purveyor of terror across the entire world. If you are a part of this imperialist mechanism called the U.S. military in all of its forms, the Navy, the Army, the Marines, all of them. And for women I don't even understand. Like, if there was something where, and I want to just talk, and it's not just to white women, but to all women, right? So that there was this thing that came up recently where they're now allowing African women to, into the army, allowing them to wear their African hairstyles, right? So they're doing all they can to kind of you know, include all of these sort of sectors of our population into their apparatus of murder and mayhem across the world, and making it easier for you to, you know, get this sort of like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? This sort of like national pride, you know, for terror. And yeah, I think that it's when I heard about, you know, women being allowed to be, I think I heard about this before, where women were allowed to be in the front lines of the military before. I don't know if this is a very new discussion, but like it falls into the same realm of a woman or man or what have you. But women have always been on the front lines of terror. White women have always been on the front lines of terror. If we go back from the beginning, white women would call their white beaux to go string up an African if they looked at them the wrong way. White mm-hmm. women would would tell somebody on something and some African gets killed, or mm-hmm. they would be the ones who be in the house, you know, doing horrible things to you, or they're the ones that standing by while they strip your baby away from you. And they're the ones who don't, you know, who even in the case where we're talking about McKinney, Texas, where, young woman was straddled by this white police officer, and he pulled his gun on some young African boys. It was white women in the streets yelling at the young African children about getting out of their neighborhood. I mean, there are the purveyors of violence, whether they're in the military or not, and they have, and that is a part of like this long, long, long historical context of, you know, how they join into how they are a part of like the oppressor nation, whether they feel like they're not getting all of the loot, right? But they're still there, experiencing it, leading it, and causing, you know, the murder and mayhem, and defending it when it happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's so true. It's painfully true. There's so many examples I can think of from Sandra Miner, I believe, here locally in St. Petersburg, was shouting, "Shoot him, shoot him," as mm-hmm. James Knight gunned down Tyrone Lewis in 1996. And that example recently of an indigenous, or, you know, so-called Latina woman who had been molested by a sheriff or a deputy in the court, and a white woman turns her back while the white man takes this indigenous woman again into the back to it's just horrific, the way that we see the complicity of the white community. And I just have to state that as a member of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And I want to let everyone know that you're listening to Reparations in Action here on the uhururadio.com site, the online voice of the International African Revolution. And we are speaking with Yejide Orunmila, National Director of the African People's Socialist Party's Women's Commission. And I'm in the studio today. Also, I want to really appreciate our new engineer, Eric Delp, for being on board with us today on Reparations in Action. Comrade Yejide Orunmila, in December 2015, the non-indict decision came down on the murder of Sandra Bland. And this is an African woman who is an activist against police brutality herself, in a way. And the African National Women's Organization site has an article about this not-so-surprising ruling, putting it in the context of the vast majority of families and victims of police terror who never see justice from the same system that brutalizes and murders the African community. From the perspective of ANWO and the African People's Socialist Party, what will it take, in your opinion, to get justice for all the Sandra Blands out there, all the unnamed, the people we don't hear about so often, that this system kills and terrorizes? And why is that vision so much different than just an individual cop going to jail once in a great while for these modern day lynchings?
So the only way we're going to get justice for Sandra Bland is to organize ourselves for power. We've seen over the last couple of years since the killing of Mike Brown that there have been many attempts to negotiate with the police, to bring police to justice, and in white vigilantes to justice. Even since Trayvon, like, there has not been any case where I think that any family would be satisfied with the verdicts of absolutely if it's not indictments, or even if they have been, you know, sent to jail. None of the families, none of the people are happy with these sorts of verdicts. And that just speaks to our why we need to organize ourselves for power. You know, we can't go to the state and say we want justice for so-and-so. We can't plead with the state. The state, like I was saying in the other program, the state ain't going to tell on itself. It's going to do everything that it can to cover itself up, even when it lets somebody go to jail. So, for example, we have Peter Lang in New York, right? This Asian cop who killed a Kai Gurley. Even when they sacrifice somebody, they still are not going to deal. They're still not going to expose themselves as the purveyor of violence. They're just going to lay out one cop as the reason why the whole, you know, that one cop is bad. That one cop didn't do what he was supposed to do or follow guidelines. But the reality is that the police and the state, which is the arm of the state, are there to occupy African communities, are there to occupy and oppress African people mm-hmm. and other oppressed people in this country. And they will continue to do it unless and until we have power in our hands. And so what that looks like is by joining the African National Women's Organization, organizing yourself with the joining the African People's Socialist Party, and understanding what African internationalism is, really understanding that contradiction. What is the basis for our, what is the basis for the misery that we're experiencing today? It's not the one cop somewhere in Holdunk, Texas, that's the reason why African people are oppressed and the reason why Michael Brown got killed in Ferguson, or Carrie Barr got killed in St. Louis, or Delandre Minifield got killed in Winchester, Virginia. That Holdunk police person isn't the reason why African people have been experiencing this sort of terror for the past 500 to 600 years mm-hmm. underneath the oppression of white people and the exploitation of our resources, the exploitation of us, the oppression and violence that come along with that. So the way that we solve this question is do something that we have been called to do by everybody that came before us, which is to fight for our freedom and build our capacity to have power over ourselves and really build up the resistance so that we can see, you know, freedom and liberation in our lifetime.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Yejide. If you could hold on the line with us, we're going to break momentarily for station identification and a couple of PSAs. If you could stay around with us for the second half of the program, I'd like to really encourage our listeners to call in to 727-565-1599. That's 727-565-1599. If you have any questions, comments, or would like to be involved in this conversation about the liberation of the African nation as a whole and the liberation of African women being part and parcel of that, we're speaking with Yejide Orunmila of the African National Women's Organization. You're listening to Reparations in Action here on the UhuruRadio.com, Uhuru News Network, the online voice of the International African Revolution. We will be right back.
Hey yo, if they could stop this fruit, they would pop this roof, drop some loot, treat us like we prostitutes. Not this youth, see me in my khaki suit, God's recruit, from far and even God salute. Try with truth, shy people can't be mute, chant my youth, till Babylon can't regroup. Pants and boots, keep them to advance the troops. We glance the truth, then dance till we burn the roof. Discern the news, it's time to return, get loose. Burn and loot, won't stop till they earn the shoot. To yearn is move, overturn an institute, and then rebuke the devil till we can't be cool.
Through all the false pretenses, but what you fail to see is all the consequences. You think our lives are cheap, history repeats. So foul that you can taste it. And while the people sleep, too comfortable to face it. His lies are incomplete, and now they can't replace it. Fret not thyself, I say. Against these laws of man, this light of life will stand.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
And welcome back to Reparations in Action here on uhururadio.com. We are still on the line with our esteemed guest, Comrade Yejide Oren Mila of the African People's Socialist Party. She's National Director of the African People's Socialist Party's Women's Commission. And we were honored during the break to have a call-in from Comrade Raya Fogarty, who is the international chair of the International Recruitment and Membership Office of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. Uhuru, and welcome to Reparations in Action, Raya.
Uhuru, thank you so much. What an honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. And I really, on behalf of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement throughout the country and, of course, out of our international office and throughout the world, unconditional solidarity with, you know, African resistance and the end to colonialism by doing our part within the oppressor nation. And in that context, the whole question of feminism, of women's rights, the analysis that was put out, we completely unite with. And as a white woman, I am not a feminist. I'm a white female African internationalist. And the Uhuru Solidarity Movement was formed by and works under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party for 40 years. And it is our great honor to white men, women, and children who all, we all live and exist off the backs of African people. And that colonialism is the problem. And we want to end our legacy as the terrorists that includes women, children, as Comrade Yezhideh so brilliantly laid out. And this is the whole feminism issue is a white imposed narrative that started in the mid 1800s in Europe, and it was exactly what has been said and exists today. It is a narrative and a goal for female members of the oppressor nation, the white oppressor nation, to get more of the stolen resources of Africa and to keep the system in place. So we say no, no more genocide, no colonialism. And the way we do it as white people is we join the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. It is the principled only way, the only kind of organization in existence in the world. It is historic, and it is a way for us as all white people to unleash our whiteness, including feminism, which is one of the last insidious vestiges of this, you know, white narrative that wants to exceptionalize and impose these things, even on men, white men who say they got to be a feminist. I mean, it is outrageous, and it must go. And I look forward to engaging in struggles about it and really appreciate this program, but I want to put a call out to everyone. We are holding a historic, and it's going to be epic, Uhuru Solidarity Movement National Convention in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is the world hub of African resistance. It is like the 2016 International Center of African Internationalism, where African people are coming from all over the world to get trained. White people are coming, you know, through the solidarity work. And it's going to be in St. Petersburg, Florida, April 16th and 17th. It'll be two incredible days. The first day, we will be going to the spot in St. Petersburg where in 1914, John Evans, an African who had been locked up in a jail, where over 1,500 white people, men, women, children, ascended upon that jail and snatched him out. The jail guards let them. They dragged him out and lynched him. And there used to be a plaque up. And we're going to be going there to show that as white people, we, you know, stand with the liberation of African people and unconditional solidarity with Black Power. And our job is to bring Black Power and reparations back into our communities and win every person to the future and to our job as, you know, for reparations. And that's going to kick off, and it will also be in solidarity with Amalia Chetela 50 years ago tearing down the most vile, disgusting mural that hung inside of City Hall in St. Petersburg. And the city has been empty. That wall's been empty for 50 years. And now with this whole influx of white people grabbing up all the trying to grab up all property and everything, are trying to make, you know, make it like everything's okay now when we know it's completely the opposite. So it's just the main thing I wanted to say is that we want you to join. Everyone who unites with, you know, the right of African people to self-determination, that colonialism is the problem, that wants to learn more, that wants to join with the future instead of holding on to the sinking ship of the system that was born of genocide. Join a Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And you go to, the way you register for the convention is you go to Uhuru, U-H-U-R-U, solidarity.org, and you will see the way to register. We really want people to come out from St. Pete. We got people coming from all over the world, and the program's going to be profound. And we have a phone number that you can call also, which is area code 727-888-3797. And that's the direct line to the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And, you know, I just want to say that the way to the future is to end colonialism. It is not to find a higher place for women, white women, on the backs of, you know, African people on stolen land. No more. And like what Yejide said, we have been the participants all along the line, mm-hmm. in the terror, in the genocide, and that continues, and it's got to stop. And there's a force within the white community that we are, that you know, is waging that battle and wants to bring all honest white people that really want to see things change and see the bright future to join Uhuru Solidarity Movement, because this is the way. We have two choices. Go down with the sinking ship or join the future of humanity. And that's the liberation of Africa and African people and the return of all the stolen wealth. That is how we become human beings and join with the future.
Uhuru, I really unite with that, Comrade Raya. Thank you so much for that statement. And I want to echo her call to attend the convention of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement on April 16th and 17th right here in St. Petersburg, Florida, beginning on the 16th with a political action to commemorate that horrific lynching of John Evans in 1914. And again, that website is Uhuru, U-H-U-R-U, solidarity.org. If you want to join, you go to uhurusolidarity.org/join-USM. And that phone number is 727-888-3797. Again, thank you so much for that statement of solidarity. Raya Fogarty, chair of the International Recruitment and Membership Office of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And I want to encourage other listeners, if you'd like to call in and be a part of this, we don't have much time left, but if you'd like to make a statement, have a question, you can call 727-565-1599. That's the number to uhururadio.com. And I want to pivot now back to Comrade Yejide Olunmila of the African People's Socialist Party. And I wanted to ask you, Comrade Yejide, are you still with us? Uhuru.
I'm here.
Thank you for being here so much. The African National Women's Organization has consistently upheld African mothers and victims of police murder and terror. You touched briefly on that, mentioning Kerry Ball Jr. in St. Louis, Missouri. I know on the website there was a mention of a big action around the murder of Ricky Bishop in London. Can you speak to the significance of these survivors, these African mothers of young African men gunned down in the prime of their life? What is this, their significance to the overall struggle for African liberation?
So, I don't know how to really convey the intense pain and suffering that a mother has to. A mother and father have to go through when you find out that your child has been murdered. Not only murdered, but murdered by the police. And then after that, after understanding that, being told that you can't see your child's body. And on top of that, being told that your son was a criminal, so it was our duty, it was a part of the plan, he needed to be snuffed out anyway, or he had bad grades in school, so he deserved, he was on the road to being a criminal. Having to hear these sorts of things about your children after they have been taken out by the police, and then having to then, in finding justice, go to the very same police, to the very same state agents, to petition them to give you any information around why they killed your child, and having them really just laugh in your face. Because ultimately, they're not going to tell you, yeah, we killed your son, okay, or yeah, we killed your daughter, so what? And they're not going to even say that. They're going to put you through onslaught of bureaucratic nonsense to tire you out and make it so that you don't want to fight. And in addition to the police and the state, there are other organizations out here who want you to be the face of tears and crying when you you lose your child, and you know, just continuously have you going from one commemoration event to the other commemoration event, you know, hugging each other and giving each other support, but none of what needs to be done, which is to push back against the state and really make that sort of struggle. So when we organize with African mothers, it is really to empower them, to make them see their own potential, to understand, help them contextualize the violence that was carried out against their child, and help them understand, like, these are the reasons why it's happening and how we need to push back. So in organizing with African mothers recently, we've formed a subcommittee called the Black Women in Black, which is an organization, which
Comrade,
is a
excuse me, I'm sorry, Comrade Uhuru Yejide. I appreciate everything you're saying, but I really want our listeners to be able to hear it, and there appears to be a little bit of a muffled effect happening. And I just want to make sure that we do everything we can to get this message clearly. Is it possible to adjust the volume or your position on the microphone, or is there anything on our end? I just want to make sure that we're getting that clearly. Comrade Yejide was putting out the intense pain that African mothers go through and their role in African liberation. And if you could continue, please.
Is this better?
I think it's a little bit better, yes.
Is this better?
Yes, it is. Thank you so much.
Okay, I had you on speaker before. So, you know, we've organized the Black Women in Black as a response to these sort of organizations that use the pain of African people, of them losing their children, of mothers in particular. And we say, we don't want you all to be helpless. We don't want you to go around from event to event, not getting what you deserve, which is justice. But we want you to mobilize, not just yourselves, but other African mothers who want to push back, who want to defend, who want to organize ourselves in a way that we demand, and we plan to do actions that will help broaden this scope and really identify it as one of genocide, you know, when we have our children being slaughtered every day in these streets. So, you know, our work with mothers is really, it's really eye-opening because it doesn't just impact the mothers, it impacts the entire community. And you can see that when we go deeper into, you know, the ways that we have to struggle.
Uhuru, thank you for speaking to that. And it's humbling to hear you describe that kind of pain. I think it's something in the white community that's hard to get our heads around. This idea of seeing your beloved child killed is hard enough, but then the denial of access to the body, and then the assassination of their character that happens by the state and by white society as well. That's something we have to take responsibility for in the Solidarity Committee as well. And if anyone wants to call in, we only have a couple minutes, but I want to repeat the number 727-565-1599. Comrade Yejide Orunmila, what kinds of contradictions do African women face that are a consequence of the special oppression of African women, as the African People's Socialist Party terms it? And if you could briefly explain that term. I know you've touched on it earlier, but could you speak to that term, special oppression, and what kinds of solutions the African National Women's Organization is developing to address those contradictions? I know you just mentioned Black Women in Black, but if you could speak to that question of the special oppression of African women.
So special oppression of African women is talking about the double oppression that African women face as a member of the colonized African masses, and also the contradictions that happen inside of the African masses, African nation, that would lead to African women being oppressed by African men. So we recognize that all of it is a result of colonial domination, that the way that we treat each other in these relationships is a result of, you know, lack of resources, lack of having anything to do with our past, our history, our culture, understanding who we are, understanding, you know, preventing and not really organizing too, because that also has this frustration where African men, they feel like they can't fight the state, so they fight you. And how we deal with that particular issue is, you know, we do it through political education. We deal with it and help African men and African women see that when another person from inside the African nation attacks you, they're not, unless they rectify that situation, that they are an enemy of African people. We don't believe in any African harming or killing any other African. And so outside of the realm of, you know, gender violence, we recognize that as something that happens in our streets every day with young men and young women, you know, killing one another. So, you know, that's an enemy. You're operating in the same vein as the colonial oppressors when you're doing their work by murdering somebody who could contribute to making a revolution for African people. And so obviously the other type of oppression is one with that comes directly from the oppressor itself through the use of state violence, the use of state agencies like child welfare in general, all these economic gentrification, all of these sort of things that leave African women vulnerable. And you would be surprised how many facets of just regular everyday things that we talk about in a sort of clinical way, like, for example, gentrification and how a lot of African women in housing projects in low-income areas are single mother-headed households, and how when they put out a plan to kind of destroy housing and push Africans out of a particular area, that highly impacts the what African women can do, and it puts the whole thing into a crisis because, you know, that's where we are. And, you know, there are so many different facets of the sort of state violence that doesn't materialize just in police, but how it materializes in different elements of our, of the work that we do and the things that we see as a result of colonialism. So, yeah, those, that's the best that I can explain it. And just, you know, I hope everybody got an understanding of the two types of oppression.
Wow. Yeah, that was very thorough, comrade. And am I correct in assessing, is that the, in a way, what you're talking about is vertical violence versus horizontal violence?
Correct.
Both,
yes,
stemming from colonialism.
Yes, yes.
And vertical violence is when it comes from the state, as you were saying, and horizontal violence is when oppressed people aren't able to take out their anger on the state, so they take it out on each other. And it's you explained it brilliantly. Thank you. I wanted to, we only have a few minutes left, and I know this is a complex question, but this term intersectionality that gets bandied about so frequently, I'm not going to read the whole question because I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. We hear it often from Hillary Clinton's campaign and Bernie Sanders' campaign, the whole white left, you know, acceptable liberal intelligentsia is talking about this term. What is it? What does it mean in the context of African liberation?
So intersectionality was developed by some black feminists to explain how the ways that black women experience oppression, and it talks about, you know, there's racial discrimination, there is, I can't remember everything, but basically it just basically says, you know, there are different ways that African women or black women are oppressed, and that we just can't look at it look at it in terms of just white people oppressing us, that there's white women who oppress us. There are white men who oppress us, and we get oppressed by, inside of our community. So it kind of lends itself to what I just said about special oppression. Mm-hmm. However, intersectionality doesn't talk to colonial oppression. It doesn't really speak to it helps, as a matter of fact, it helps white women understand all the pains and sorrows of black women, and how they need to better their feminism to deal with all of those components, and so that how they can work together as women, as opposed to, you know, to help black women come closer to feminism and become full-fledged members of the feminist, I'm going to call it a feminist class, you know, to be full-fledged members of feminism, and so that white women can understand their problems and really do their work and do their feminist work in a holistic way. But it still doesn't really get to the basis and the crux of the problem, which is colonialism, and that the white women along with white men are of the oppressor nation. There is no intersectionality of understanding. There's only one, I'm trying to make it clear, it's only one way to understand African women's oppression. It's the same way that you understand African men's oppression, that there are colonizers and there are the colonized. There are oppressor nations and then the oppressed. And that in the oppressed nation, there are a whole bunch of things that happen as a result of being colonial dominated, having the oppressor nation have control over you. And so the only way to deal with that question is not to get white women to understand that there are so many components to black womanhood, but to overturn our relationship to imperialism, to destroy colonialism.
And if you unite with Comrade Yejide, we have 10 seconds. Thank you so much.
Oh,
you've been listening to Yejide Orunmila on Reparations in Action.